much, Rachel. Now I have to live up to expectations, especially by being bubbly. I won't be. From the wonderful talk by Stuart, we are going, and the future, we are going to go back to the past slowly and to the very boring methods of paleography. And I apologize, I will have to repeat some of the methodological concerns that we have always heard. And from the very beginning, I would like, first of all, to thank Rachel and Cesar, who is here, because thanks to Cesar's initiative and Rachel's help, every year in July, we have 2 weeks workshop in Hebrew, medieval Hebrew paleography at the Bodleian Library. We thank as well the authorities of the library for allowing to do that. It is indeed, as we have already heard with Stuart's presentation, a very important part of paleographical training is to look at the manuscripts. We have heard a lot about looking at the images. It's wonderful. We do have manuscripts coming to our home, and this transformed our way of looking at them, teaching them, of course. However, we have to remember that for a proper paleographical work, we always need to go back to the original. They do not look the same if you look at the details. So this is very important. So I said that we will be going back to more traditional methods. It doesn't mean that I don't like myself digital paleography. On the contrary, although I'm very bad in everything which is computers and algorithms, I'm a very enthusiastic user of new methods, especially of archetype that Stuart has just shown. And two of my doctoral students based a paleography research thesis on archetype. So we are using archetype. I must say it's not very user-friendly for a person like me, but for my students it works very well. And indeed, the advantage of this particular digital method is that you have full control on what you are doing. I am as well a traitor. I have joined one of these enormous projects in the making, together with Peter Stokes, Nahum Dershowitz from Tel Aviv, Avi Schmidman, and Daniel Steckel-Benezra from Paris, which aims to transcribe, we have seen the transcription project, automatically the entire corpus of Hebrew manuscripts and to ask the computer for paleographical typology. I am a part of this project. I don't believe at all that the computer will be able to do it, of course, because it will put all of us out of work. But I do believe that working on this kind of projects as a paleographer allows you to see your material differently and to ask different kinds of questions. So, Hebrew paleography is today at its very beginnings. So as far as Latin paleography and other classical paleographies are concerned, these traditional paleographies step into 21st century and digital stage of paleography with a luggage going back to at least Mabillon in 1671, the Re Diplomatica and the chapter on paleography. And teaching institutions where only paleography has been taught for several centuries. This is not the case of Hebrew paleography. So we jumped into digital age without having a very solid methodological grounding in the study of Hebrew script. And we all feel it. So what I do myself, I do join all these digital programs. However, when I teach paleography, I teach it in a traditional way. And as I have told you, we are at the very beginning and our methodology is very weak. Also, what has been done since 1970s, the creation of the French and Israeli project of Hebrew paleography and codicology by Malachi Betarieh, whose voice you have heard with the description of the Kennicott Bible, and Colette Sirat, who was my predecessor in Paris, professor of Hebrew paleography at École Pratique des Hautes Études. Because paleography was so tricky and the methods so complicated, they focused on what could be measured in a scientific way. That means codicology, we should be talking about codicology actually at our at this workshop. We talk about paleography, but Hebrew codicology has been studied much better, at least as far as explicitly dated manuscripts are concerned. And there is a wonderful database which is called Sfardata that was created in Israel by Malachi Betari and his team, where you can consult the images, black and white, not very good quality, but images and descriptions of the entire corpus of dated manuscripts, dated by the colophon of the scribe, when the manuscript tells you when it was written and sometimes where it was written. However, this represents 3,500 manuscripts, whereas we have about 80,000 medieval Hebrew manuscripts to consider, and in addition to that, we have fragments. So we have Cairo Geniza fragments from the medieval period between the 9th century onwards, and this corresponds to about 350,000 shelf marks in 72 different collections in the world. And we have as well European fragments, fragments of Hebrew manuscripts found in the bindings of other books. And these are today about 20,000 of identified fragments. However, every day we make new discoveries, very complicated, across the world, including Australia recently. Very interesting. Yes, we have, because books travel, so the bindings travel, so Hebrew manuscripts travel. So this is what happened. So we are dealing with a relatively large corpus, but only a very small percentage contains the vital historical information, where, when the manuscript was written. So this is a short introduction, and I would like immediately to ask Rachel to stop me, because I will talk too long. So first of all, when we talk about paleographical research as distinct from other parts of book history, what are the aims of paleography? We have already heard it in a much nicer and quicker way from Stuart. But actually the first aim is to read what other people can't read. And this objective is a very frequent aim in teaching paleography. We are going to talk pedagogy, teaching, methods of teaching. I followed several different groups of paleography lessons, and usually these lessons are made in such a way that there is a photocopy or a good quality image of a manuscript, and the group is reading this manuscript. So the method is reading through and learning about the letters, as it were, by experience, in a very practical way. This corresponds to the first aim of paleography, to learn how to read. Why can't we learn a manuscript? Why do we need to learn how to read it? There are two basic ways of looking at it. There are objective problems like this palimpsest. Fragmentary manuscripts, or one script upon the other, or erased scripts, and so on and so forth. How can paleography help here? A little. What we usually do, we try to, today, in today's time, we try to enroll different disciplines and different ways of looking at the materials. It's very important. So we have all this multispectral imaging, radiography applied to manuscripts. Some people read manuscripts like Greek palimpsest of Archimedes through physics and accelerator of particles and so on and so forth, with quite good results of legibility. This is science, and we use it. You know, when you take your magnifying glass, you already use scientific ways to read your manuscripts to help you read. Another problem is a subjective problem. The handwriting is perfectly clear, the manuscript is in good shape. However, we can't read it. Why? Because we are not familiar with the script. This is perfectly normal. We are never familiar with the script before we start reading it. So as a paleographer, you have more experience with reading different scripts because you are forced by your teachers or by yourself to go into different types of manuscripts. This is not a desperate thing. The reading as such and recognizing the shape is a cognitive process, and you have the capacities, our human brain has a capacity of learning new shapes of letters. more difficult because in our infancy we have learned specific ways of tracing and specific shapes of the letters. So each time when we have to recognize different shapes for the same letter, it is a little effort. However, we can manage it. So with experience, we can learn different shapes for specific letters. When I start teaching my students, I say, well, don't be afraid of this 15th century Sephardic script where you can't recognize anything. Doesn't matter. Think like that. When this script was written, the writers and the readers were perfectly familiar with this particular script to such an extent that they used this one as unbelievable that it can seem to us. So if they made it in the 15th century, you have just to train. So how can you train doing it? Here again, we have seen automatic transcription, but you can as well have a kind of primary school tools. You can do it just transcribing manuscripts, but you can do it as well online. And I may recommend to you a multiple, very simple, not sophisticated tool which was manually created for at Ecole Pratique de l'Objectif in Paris, which is accessible online. It's called Multiple. And you can simply train in transcribing words. The correction will come automatically. However, every single manuscript was humanly introduced by people in order to train. So there is this possibility of training in different scripts, which can be done differently, but it can be done as a game on the computer. No problem about that. The second and the very important element and question of paleography today and localized, the typology. It is the most basic aim of paleography, and as a paleographer who teaches paleography and holds probably what is the only chair in Hebrew paleography in the world, I am very often asked the basic question, when and where. That's what we are for. Sometimes you feel, there is more to paleography than just, you know, telling people when and where. And as Gerard has just said, it's very easy to say, oh yes, 14th century northern France. Not possible, they just very sad. 14th century southern France. You know, it's quite easy to take a good air of the person who knows and say it because you have an institution behind you. So the second thing that I tell my students, if a paleographer or myself tells you a date or a place of a manuscript, it is your duty to ask why. If I can't explain to you why, it means that I am wrong. It is not possible for a good paleographer not to explain the reasons why. Because going away from computers that maybe will be able to pick it up at some point, working on paleography is actually working on identifying specific pertinent points of the script. The most important thing I have learned from my teacher, Colette Sirat, is that when you look at the shapes of the letters one after another, because it is a handwritten artifact made by human hand, no letter will be identical to the next, even on the same page. Every aleph, every bet, or A or B, and so on and so forth, will be different. And you know it very well. So when you look at the shape of the letter, you look at a scale of shapes. And then you have to train to find pertinent features which will differentiate that, let's say, Sephardi Aleph from Ashkenazi Aleph, or the Aleph of the scribe A and scribe B. So what we are looking for are these pertinent features. It is a collective work. Pertinent features should be defined by scholars working on different small groups of manuscripts. They should be learned and put together. With Hebrew paleography, we have a problem. We have very few works describing specific groups of manuscripts. We have lots of works in longue durée, you know, from Qumran, 1st century AD, how it developed until modern Israel. Israeli script, but we don't have lists of pertinent features for periods. And some of our colleagues say, well, it's not really possible. The Hebrew script is so repetitive as far as square script is concerned. Actually, I claim that it's perfectly possible. We just need to do the work. And this is what I'm trying to do on specific groups of study. Then what we are not going to talk about, there are two other elements to the study of paleography, at least. So we have studied the technological and cognitive aspects of the script, extremely important. You don't know the scribe, you don't know where he worked, you are a bad paleographer, as far as typology is concerned. However, you can follow the work of this person for, let's say, half an hour until you are tired. And it's absolutely rewarding, because by following the decisions that the scribe makes, and here the ductus, so the ductus, the order, number, direction of strokes, which are used, the movements of the hand, which are used to trace a letter, but not only a letter, but also the relationship between the letters in a word and between the lines, because the scribe has to make decisions. You know, you have some letters that are on four levels, so the lamed having an ascender. How are you going to get it? You know, in respect to the line above, that will change completely the shape of the letter. Sometimes the lamed will go in a completely different direction in order to fit to the line before. So it's not just the shape of the letters. Each letter has a neighbor, an environment, and you need to see. It's very important. So then you follow these cognitive aspects of the decision-making by the scribe. And also, of course, you contribute to the most fashionable now discipline of manuscript studies, because it is only through proper dating and localizing of the manuscript that you can talk about the transmission of models, ideas, because you know that paleography, the writing, does not transform itself. It's not, you know, there were lots of evolutionary theories in paleography, especially here in England after Darwin. Latin paleographers were writing books about the change of stronger letters and disappears of the weaker forms. Well, it's not like that. We are talking about education. So the development, the script develops through time, as we have seen with Bowie. So the script develops through time and in different places. However, it does not develop itself. It's not a human being. It's an artifact created by the man. So what happens is that men follow specific models. These models are double. They can be learned through infancy, and we have from the Cairo Geniza wonderful children primers, where we see how the teachers were making models of the letters, and the students had to fill them in with colored ink in order to learn how to shape the letters. So the ductus was important. Not only the morphology of the letter, but also the ductus. Oh,
yeah, I haven't even started. Okay, so all this is important. We have already seen the problem. Is paleography a subjective art? And Montagu wrote James, saying, as we have seen, I can't teach paleography.
What is he talking about? He's talking about a skill, a personal skill, and the experience, the training of the eye that we do need. However, here I always answer my students, well, you know, James is a wonderful paleographer. And what I tell my students is that, well, it's not really like that. What he's talking about is about the experience of identifying the symptoms, the pertinent features I told you about, even if it is more or less unconscious for him. So a good paleographer will say, okay, I know that it's 11th century French. However, in fact, the paleographer knows it because he has identified the pertinent features. Like with Sherlock Holmes, I always use this clues approach when I explain it to my students. You read Sherlock Holmes, there's Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson. There is a man coming in and Sherlock Holmes says, oh, this man has just been to China and his wife doesn't love him. And then Watson says, well, it's magic. And Sherlock Holmes, no, this Inker was stained with a kind of ink that only in China you can find, and his top hat was not lovingly brushed, so his wife doesn't like him. So you understand, and that's Conan Doyle. That's what is happening. It's like with doctors, symptoms. There are specific little symptoms that the paleographer sees. The point is that we need to learn to express them, to identify them, and to say them. And that's a little bit more complicated. Or is paleography a measurable science? Here I have brought Salomon Birnbaum, an excellent paleographer, as well. His book that was written between 52 volumes, 1957 and 71. And here he's talking about measuring the components of the letters, about 100,000 of them, according to his estimate. Well, the computers could do it. And there are projects where the computers try to do it. However, that's not how I see the paleography. So, since I have absolutely no time, so I would like to tell you very, very quickly about how I myself teach paleography to my students. I use a method which is called Shu method, standard handwriting, observation and evaluation method, which is a forensic method of study. It was devised in Paris by Marie-Jeanne Sedaine, who for 50 years was sending people to prison on the basis of expertise, handwriting expertise. Her aim was French, of course, French writing, and decision whether it's the same handwriting or not. Not the type of the script as a typological entity, but handwriting, written by the same person or not. So what I have done, I have learned with this person in the criminology department of the French university, and I have applied the method to Hebrew paleography and tried to use this method not in a forensic sense only for handwriting and differentiation of handwriting, but also as a way to look at the manuscript. And I have realized something since my early years as a student, that when you come to see a manuscript and you have no experience with dealing with it, you sit there in front of the manuscript and say, oh wow, it's beautiful, oh wow, that's great, and then you start to transcribe it because you don't know the questions that you are supposed to ask. So, you know, the manuscript will answer back, but you need to write the key. It's a sesame key that you need. You need to ask proper questions so that the manuscript becomes a friend. It answers back. So what we need to learn, and I don't really teach the students in such a way that they say, after 2 weeks you will be able to tell me this is French 10th century and this is Italian 11th. Okay, no. But what I try to teach the students is to how to look at the manuscript, to ask proper questions, to observe the manuscript, and then things will slowly, with time, fall in, like Montagu wrote James says, it's looking at the manuscripts, but you can look at as many manuscripts as you want, and if you don't look properly, it won't help. Okay? So, very 1 minute, very short thing. This is a global method, which begins from the page as a unit, paleographical unit, goes to the line where you describe the letters or observe the letters in respect to the headline and baseline. You have letters that are included, the body of the letter in the line of writing, others that go above, below. Some of them, you know that the model that you have in your head, which for us is the printed Israeli script, which is based on 14th and 15th century Sephardi square manuscript script. This is what we read easily, okay? So when we describe, we need to have a model in our head. And in respect to this model, we say, okay, fine, this letter should go up, but it doesn't. Or it should go below the baseline, it doesn't. These are very pertinent features. These are typological features for the Hebrew script. So you have a kind of ideal body of the letter, and things that go up.
You have basic components of the letters that you can describe in two ways. You can describe them in a very static way, in a sense of this is how the letter looks like. These are the components, the ascenders, descenders, serifs, and so on and so forth. Feet of the letters, nose of the letter pay, the arms, the lobe. You know, I like using this, not all paleographers do it, but I like very much using these body-like things. The heads, hooks, roofs, and so on and so forth. So you can describe from the line, from the page, from the line, from the proportions of the letters, and so on and so forth. You go to the details, to the shape of the letter, which is static. You can talk about left-hand side, right-hand side, and so on and so forth. And then about the ductus. And I advise to look at both. Ductus is very difficult sometimes. Sometimes you don't really know how the scribe made his letter. But there are ways, like letters that he missed, he didn't do properly, to see how every scribe worked to trace the letters. And then I have no time to go into it, but the method is based on a questionnaire checklist, which contains about 100 questions, which are not defined statistically, in the sense that if I answer more than 50% on this side, it means that it's an Ashkenazi rather than a Sephardi manuscript. Not at all. It is not the, it doesn't give you a clear answer or result about the type, but it allows you to take into consideration everything you should to describe a script. I will stop here because I have no more time, but if you are interested, I'm very happy to show you the method differently. Thank you very much.